Hello and welcome to Terrifying Robot Dog. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about how technology is changing the way we interact with the world. This week, we're going to figure it out. Stay tuned. Terrifying Robot Dog is next. Welcome to the new TRD format, Kelly.
Yes, yes, thank you. Yeah, it's a little more hands-off this time around.
It's a little more hangouty.
Yeah.
So this is us trying to make things better for you, dear listener. easier for us, right? So I think I warned you in the people on the mailing list, the copious numbers of people we have in the mailing list, which is now numbering in the 40s.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we're way up there. Approaching my actual age, in fact.
Surpassed mine.
Very nice. Very, very nice. So our mailing list is older than Kelly, but not quite as old as me yet. I'm sure that will change soon. But I warned people on the list that we are trying some new production approaches, which include the way we do the music and how we decide topics and so on and so forth. So it's probably going to be a little wobbly for an episode or two, but I think we'll get it down. So please bear with us while we do that. So Cal, have you seen anything in tech this week that really blew your mind? I've seen a couple things, so I think we can probably pick one of those, but there's, I think, a lot of interesting stuff going on. Is there anything particular that caught your eye?
There's nothing specific. I saw a couple of things that were interesting that might be good to talk about in the future, but I would want to look into them more first. It's more a lot of biotech stuff.
Cool. Yeah, I've got a related sort of related topic from our old friend Ray Kurzweil. And I think probably any listener to the show will be familiar with Kurzweil. He's very much a futurist, very much optimistic about AI and the singularity and humans uploading their consciousness into the network and becoming immortal. And he's been predicting things since the 80s, which seem crazy and yet have come to pass on a pretty predictable, like he's got a pretty reliable
track record at this point.
Yeah, his batting average is good. Plus, he's completely hilarious because he delivers these almost biblical pronouncements with this kind of bored disinterest. Like, obviously, by 2025, we'll all be immortal. And obviously, nanotech will exist. And as you can see by this chart that I just put up here that I made myself, it's obvious that, you know, it's like...
Yeah, it's just going to be a thing.
It is sort of dismissive boredom. It's so convincing. It's so much more convincing than probably, I don't know, I'm trying to think of somebody who's a real like Bible thumping kind of podium slamming. This is what's going to happen. You know, it's like,
yeah,
like yeah. It's a little harder to believe if somebody's pushing the idea that hard that it's really going to happen.
And someone's right.
Obviously this is going to either.
It's like, why can't you all see this? This shouldn't even be up for debate. Right. It's clearly the way it's going to be.
He's already moved past it. Like,
yeah.
How will we exchange value when we're all ghosts, you know? But I went down this rabbit hole recently, late night YouTube rabbit hole that.
Oh, those are the worst or best.
Yeah, worst or best, right? It's definitely one of those like why in the morning when you have to get up, you're like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
But it was a good one. It was a bunch of sort of future, you know, danger of AI kind of talks. Like, what should we be worried about now with AI? But it also led me into introduced me to a bunch of people. You know, the usual suspects were there. There was one panel, in fact, where there's a stage full of people like Elon Musk and Ray Kurzweil and it's just like a million. There was literally 10 people who I couldn't believe all had the schedule, you know, the time Tetris
right.
worked right. So that they could all be on the same stage at the same time. I'm trying to think of who's the sort of AI philosopher guy is, English guy. I keep wanting to say Nils Lofgren, but that's the guitarist from the E Street Band. anyway, I'll figure it out and put in the show notes. His name's escaping me. I'm having a brain fart, but he's super famous. And he's kind of like, he's more of a philosopher than a technologist.
Oh, I know who you're talking about too, but I can't think of his name either.
it's, let's just say Nils Lofgren, because that he can do a backflip while playing guitar, shredding solos. So here's the thing that I wanted to bring up. So Kurzweil's super optimistic. Like in all of these panels, he's the optimist, and he does say that, like, look, fire can burn things down, but it's also great. And he recognizes that there are some concerns, but he's a little bit like, well, we've had technology for a long time and we work the concerns out and that's what'll happen this time.
Right. Like, you could do a lot of damage with the technology we have now.
Right.
And by and large, we don't.
Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, of course, the counter argument that, you know, this is 100 times bigger or 1,000 times bigger than a nuclear weapon. And maybe nuclear weapons were a little bit too much power. You know, it's kind of like someone can make a snap decision. It's kind of how I'm about to open up a can of worms, but it's kind of how I feel about guns. It's like, okay, they're useful in situations. I don't think anybody can debate that. I mean, hunting is kind of important. I mean, I think most people can agree that they're useful in some situations. It's a tool. The problem is that to me personally, mm-hmm. it allows someone to make a snap decision that has permanent consequences. So I would actually lump tattoos in the same category.
Okay. Tattoos and guns.
Different order of magnitude, but the same kind of problem. Where it's
tattoos and guns and other things I'll not say because we're trying to keep this family friendly.
Yeah, and then and AI. Yeah, including non-family friendly things. But all those things that are very difficult to undo. So it's easy to make a snap decision and very difficult to undo. And that's the thing that perhaps makes me a little bit more nervous about AI than other technology, than fire, for example. I suppose it's true with fire too. It's, you could do something in a snap moment and really set an entire forest on fire, and that does happen and has happened recently. But I guess the
takes a little longer to get out of control.
Sure. And it's going to be inherently localized. So if you have a global network and you release a fire, air quotes, on the global network, and it spreads like wildfire, then what? Even if just the network comes down, that would be a giant problem. I mean, like when DNS went down like a few months ago, that was a giant problem. But anyway, besides, so he's on the optimistic end of the spectrum. And I think I started to get a little bit of a vision into why. So I see this, he does his normal presentation. And if you've seen any of his presentations, you've seen all of his presentations because he does them word for word. He has this capability of memorizing these presentations and delivering them in a casual way, but they are word for word the same.
Are we certain that Ray Kurzweil himself is not an AI?
Well, no, not really. He's a convincing one to me. So, okay. So he does this presentation, but it's a newer one. So there's some new stuff in it. So 90% of it, you've heard it before, but at the end they did a Q&A, which I'm not used to seeing from him. And one of the questions was, you know, in the talk, he just mentioned that people were going to be immortal, like, obviously. So they were like, well, what's your personal plan B? Like, what if you're wrong? And he's like, I'm not wrong. There's no plan B. He was like, of course, we'll still have tragedies. Like, you know, I almost said car accidents. He didn't say that. There won't be car accidents, but, you know, people will still get, whatever, hit by the proverbial bus.
Right.
But dying of old age will cease to be a thing. And I'd never heard this one before, but he has no plan B for it, which tells me, which perhaps gives me an indication of why he's so pro AI, because he's sure that AI will figure out how to get us there. Like, so he basically doesn't want to die like everyone, but mm-hmm. not like everyone. He believes that it's within reach in his lifetime. And he's probably late 60s, you know, so he believes that it's within reach, potentially within his lifetime, to get to what he calls bridges, where we have developments that, and this is me injecting myself into the picture. I think he's thinking that AI is the way that will make this exponential leap up in technology to sort of not defeat death, but defeat old age, let's say.
Okay.
And in the past, I'd always looked at it as him thinking that we were going to convert ourselves, our brainwaves, our consciousness, the thinking part of your body, into data that would then be uploaded into a sort of a silicon substrate, if you want to look at it like that.
Right. Like, we would just upload ourselves to the cloud.
Right. That was my take on it. And I swear that I've heard him say that or read it in one of his books, but that is not what he was pitching here. What he's pitching here is this: these three bridges where we first use AI to figure out how to conquer common diseases that, you know, like heart disease and cancer and things that are really common. And then there's a bridge phase in the middle that I'm spacing on right now. But there's a bridge, there's three bridges. There's the there's that first bridge. The second bridge is something that I'm spacing on. Apologies, dear listener, but we'll link to the video. And then the third bridge is not that we upload our consciousness to the cloud, but that we inject the computers into our bodies. So okay. we've had shows in the past where we've argued that if you don't have a body, you're not human anymore. And this is a slightly different take on it. Because, you know, if you don't have to think about food and if you don't have to think about sex and you don't have to think about putting on clothes, and you don't have to think about staying warm, you don't have to think about keeping rain off of your body, you're not human. That's not human. Like that's
so- right. That takes away like we said last time, you know, maintaining the meat bag is like 80% of the work.
Right. It's if you dear listener, if you think about it, we've said this before, but if you think about it tomorrow as you're going through your day. How many decisions you make, and you make probably numerous decisions every single minute. Think about how many of them would disappear if you didn't have a body. And it's like 80% for me. The time in the day that I'm operating in a pure thought space, very low.
I'd get back a half hour of my day if I just didn't have to decide what to have for dinner.
Right? We got plated because we were driving each other crazy trying to decide what to eat for dinner. So someone just sends it to us and we cook it.
Right. We go through that discussion every day.
Right. And like, you know, before we started recording, I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. You know, or like, oh, my feet are hot. I'm going to take my shoes off. Like all of that stuff just disappears. I'm cozy in front of the fire, like a whole bunch hugging my kids, like all these pleasures and pains and concerns, they just disappear.
And, yeah, the good and the bad.
Right. And then you end up in this space that's really, I don't know what it would be, but it would be comedy. It would be like trying to make each other
depression.
It might be depression. Yeah, certainly. I mean, I'm trying to think what the positive things would be, like comedy, lively debate about what I don't know because who would care? So it gets weird. So this is a new rub. That's why I brought it up. This is a new rub. He's like, look, we're gonna have nanobots. Obviously, we're going to have nanobots that are injected into our bodies that repair our organs in real time. And, you know,
side note, when you were asking if I had any topics and I said just a couple of things in biotech that might bear some more looking into first, one of those was about injectable nanobots that attack cancer cells.
Nice. Is it a CRISPR thing or are they actual nanobots?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I believe they're actual.
Yeah. Because CRISPR, I think, is a chemical thing. Yeah. But so, yeah. Okay, so that totally changes my... I don't know if this is a new thing for Kurzweil or it's something that I just missed from him, but I always thought he was talking about uploading our consciousness to the cloud. But what he talked about in this more recent session was uploading the computers to our body, basically.
Right.
And...
becoming one with the cloud.
Yeah, becoming the cloud, right. But not rejecting the body, because then you've still got all of your normal sensory mechanisms, which I think is a huge deal and was an mm-hmm. important plot point at the very beginning of We Are Bob.
Yeah.
So I was like, that becomes very interesting. And so here's a question for you, Kelly. So in a situation where... let's just call it old age. You no longer die of old age or disease that sort of like entropy causes of death. Is it more or less tragic when someone dies?
You know, on the one hand, I think it's more because it's just not something you're as accustomed to.
Right. It's rarer.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I want to say less because, you know, I personally think there's a lot of downsides to living forever. Maybe, of course, those might all go away if we're all living forever, though. Who knows?
I don't know. But so, and it raises so many questions. Like, do you continue, like if there are nanobots repairing your liver or your gallbladder or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're like 700, what do you look like? Like, do the nanobots also repair, like, your visible appearance? Is your muscle tone still good, or are you to like turn into the face of Bo or whatever it was called?
Right. Do you stay young adult body, middle-aged body? Do you age only much more slowly?
Are you frozen at the age that you got the injection?
Like, pick. Like, okay, I'm happy with where I'm at now. I'm gonna just like hit the pause button on the aging, or
right, or is like the leading edge generation, the generation that was alive when this first existed, do they all look like Yoda?
Right.
You know, it's imagine that. Imagine being you're Yoda. You're 700.
Okay.
Your descendants are all you're like a great 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 grandfather or grandmother. Do you have like 350 people in your immediate family?
Immediate family, yeah.
It's,
you know, we can't solve for immortality unless Elon gets us to Mars.
Yeah. Well, so it
we'll run out of room.
Exactly. Well, there's the whole middle of the United States. It's basically empty. Have you ever tried to drive across Kansas?
And the middle of Canada is the same way. Like, well, then most of the upper half of Canada.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I've heard immortality people say that, you know, you can fit every human being on the earth into a very unbelievably small cube. You know, it's like it wouldn't be comfortable, but like just in terms of physical mass, you know, like size, they fit.
Right, right. But you still need room to like.
Yeah, resources.
Grow crops and yeah.
Yeah, that's when you get asteroid mining, which are there are literally already space mining companies in the Earth right now. Like on planet Earth, there are companies that have been created to space mine. So, you know, link in show notes. Yeah. But there's that. It's like we need more space potentially. Like, what kind of products and services does a 700-year-old Yoda needs? Like,
I'm going to say like a really good skin cream.
Exactly.
Oh man. I don't know. All I know is if I don't get rid of this eczema, I don't want to live to 700.
That's torture.
Yeah.
That is torture.
Yeah.
One would think the nanobots would be able to address that.
One would think. Yeah.
So, and then you can go in a lot of directions from here. Like, all right, let's say, like on the tragic note, like is killing someone worse if they would never, and like the word immortality, I don't know if that's the right word. I kind of reserve the word immortality for something that can't be killed.
Like Captain Jack.
Yeah. Or like, I guess like vampires in the Dresden books, they can be killed, but they're considered immortal, aren't they? Or like gods.
I think it's using.
They're like.
Yeah, it's still
rare cases, like once a year in a particular place when the moon is high, they can be killed, but they're still immortals. So I don't know, what do you think? Is the word
I tend to think of immortal as can't be killed. I don't know. Well, I mean,
takes all of the like narrative suspense out of everything, doesn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. I think we're just arguing semantics.
Yeah, it's kind of like it reminds me of the time in technology when it became possible to create offline web apps, which was an oxymoron at one time, but then became a reality. So to imagine you could have immortals that you could have people who like are immortal, but can still die.
Right. Like they won't die of any natural causes.
Mm-hmm. Or like you could imagine a situation where you're away from medical assistance. You're just in a bad spot.
Right.
Like, crud, I'm in transit between Mars and the moon and this bad thing happened and the batteries, my nanobots ran out. But I have to say.
Right. Those high G burns can be dangerous.
That's for
man.
Sure. Oh, dear listener, let's take a quick side note since this is the new style TRD 2.0. Yeah.
The 2.0 is just kind of all over the place.
It's all waffle all the time. The new Expanse book is out.
It's so good.
It is really good. So, I mean, I'm barely into it. Kelly's a little bit farther ahead of me.
Yeah, about halfway done. I didn't get a chance to read as much yesterday as I wanted to.
Are you reading or listening?
I'm reading. Okay.
So I'm listening, and I think I'm going to stop and read it because...
Yeah, I'm going to listen later, but I always read first.
Yeah, it's a little... confusing, honestly. There's some parts that I'm like, wait a second, because it's been so long since I listened to the last book, non-novella, that I'm like, okay, this seems familiar, but I can't remember who they were in the last book. And then I'm like, so I'm missing some backstory. And then there's a little bit of a like Star Wars One Trade Federation thing going on where I'm like, wait a second, what are the motivations here? Like when it was Earthers and Belters and Martians, it was a lot easier to keep track of. So I don't think that's a spoiler. It just gets a little more complicated. And, but the writing is still great. The story is still great. The characters are still great. So
yeah.
Anyway, somehow we got onto that because of immortality and the high G burns.
Yes. The high G burns. That's how we got to it. Yes. Yes. And the fact that, you know, I want to live in that universe.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What about it is appealing? Just the ability to sort of explore the vastness of space.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I think maybe I might actually want to live in like the early books of that universe.
Right. The early ones. Oh, interesting. Pre-gate.
Yeah, but or pre-gate or very thereafter. I mean, I don't want to be stuck on Earth, obviously.
Gotcha. So interesting. I don't think, I mean, if I'm being 100% honest, I don't think I could handle it. I don't think I'm flexible enough at this age.
Oh, I don't think I could
emotionally,
either.
But not physically, but emotionally.
Yeah, realistically, I don't think I could either.
But if I was immortal and I had time to kind of slide into it, if we're saying immortal is that you can still be killed, but you're just not going to die of natural causes, then maybe I could, I'm not going to say get used to it, but get comfortable with it enough for it to be entertaining and fun. Kind of like a vacation, you know, like, oh, you know, I could go to the south of France and that'd be fun, but I still want to go home. You know, right. I'm like at the point in my life where nostalgia has a very, very strong gravitational pull on me. So imagine if I was 700. Yeah. So, you know, and I was not like that before. So it's a very noticeable change.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And I guess I notice I'm getting more like that too. As I get older, it's like a lot of stuff just doesn't matter anymore.
This is semantic, but I'm trying to think if there are nanobots operating in your body that are being controlled by, let's call it an artificial intelligence. So that they are running on a machine learning algorithm, an algorithm that was created by machine learning that no human actually understands. And we don't really, it's sort of unpredictable. It just seems to have very high utility.
And it's what's keeping you alive.
Right.
Okay.
We don't know how it works, but man, does it work. And is that fundamentally different than getting vaccinated when you're a little kid? So if taking a needle and injecting.
Like because 5-year-old me doesn't know how the vaccine works.
Right.
5-year-old me doesn't care either.
No. I mean, other than like, I don't want to get a shot. 5-year-old me is like, okay, this is what's done. And the fundamental makeup of what's being injected into you in a vaccine situation and like an autonomous nanobot swarm is dramatically different.
Yeah.
From a technical standpoint, but. I'm thinking from like a meaning standpoint. I almost said ethical, but it's not ethical. It's more like a meaning standpoint. Like, does it matter that instead of antibodies or, you know, like, I sort of have a vague concept of what a vaccine is, but it's chemical.
Does it matter that it's like machine? Yeah. See, this gets into a really interesting question, because I was about to ask when you said if there's this thing that it keeps us alive, we don't understand how it works, but boy, does it work. And then I thought, like, wait a minute. It's like, did we just create Max Jesus?
But we already don't understand half the stuff that makes our body work.
That's true. But someone somewhere understands, like, how a vaccine works.
A vaccine, sure.
Obviously, or they wouldn't be able to make it.
Sure.
But...
But so that's like a preventative measure. So I'm wondering if there's a fundamental difference because like vaccines definitely, I think it's fair to call it a preventative measure. A nanobot swarm in your bloodstream is a proactive.
Yeah. I mean, it's still preventative in the sense that it prevents you from dying, but it's a much more active role. Whereas vaccines just allow your body to sort of passively build up this resistance to the thing. Whereas nanobots going out and like actively repairing things.
Okay. No, that's, I think that's a better way to look at it, because I think a way a vaccine works, I'm probably wrong, but I think it's that it enhances your immune system. It's kind of like,
yeah, it exposes you to just enough of the thing for your body to build up antibodies against
it. Yeah. So it's like a drill sergeant for your immune system. So if you, what if you could, I get then in that kind of mental model, you could imagine the nanobot swarm being like, oh, I'm like giving my immune system a bunch of extra tools or sending in contractors, you know, to rebuild the house. So it's kind of like your immune system. Like my immune system is kind of like me banging around my house, trying to hang a lamp or whatever, a chandelier, or like fix a pipe. Or I could call in experts who can totally mac out
like
my
nanobot experts. Who could,
yeah. Right. So these are like experts that you call in. So here's the crazy thing. Okay. If you really want to go nuts, you really want to go down this rabbit hole.
Okay, because this was all making so much sense already.
This is obvious. This is obviously going to happen.
Okay. Yeah, obviously.
Who owns the nanobots? And who owns the software that runs the nanobots?
Like, if you get a nanobot injection, are they your nanobots? Or like, are you like...
Are they on loan? Do they get sucked out? Do they...
Yeah, what happens? Like, if you miss a payment, yeah. Do they get deactivated?
Right. So who manufactures them? Who, you know, would probably be someone like Novartis or whatever. It'll be like a pharma company. But the pharma company is not going to write the software. If they're anything like other giant dinosaur legacy businesses that I work with, they're going to outsource that to somebody. They're not going to build it in-house. Mm-hmm. It's just nowhere near a core competency. So they're going to outsource that to almost obviously to Google. Obviously, it'll be Google.
Obviously.
So Novartis is going to hire Google to write the software for the nanobots that they also probably outsource to somebody else to manufacture. They buy some IP from some research scientist, probably Ray Kurzweil. Mm-hmm. They have them manufactured.
So
Google provides.
So you get your Tesla nanobots.
Yeah. And then somebody sticks a giant syringe in your buns, and now all of a sudden you don't die anymore. Now, what happens if, like, right? Is it connect? Are you connected? Connected to the cloud? Can it be turned off remotely?
Like, do you get software updates?
Yeah, right. And how do you excrete them? What happens when they go into the biosphere? Like, do you flush them down the toilet? What happens when they end up in a fish? Immortal fish? That would be awesome.
Like, should we just be putting them in the water supply to begin with?
Right. Giant tuna. There's an unintended consequence.
Yeah.
You almost have to imagine that they would be...
Unintended title.
Oh, right. That's another good thing. We have to pick a title while we're actually podcasting. What did we say? Giant tuna? I like it.
Yeah. And there was another one, but I forget it now. So.
All right. We'll have to get better at that. Dear listener.
Yeah, we will.
Keep us honest. So I don't know. You know, this is super waffly, but it's just so wild to think, let's just make a couple of giant leaps of faith, because he's been right about a lot of stuff, I got to say. I feel like he's maybe a little over-optimistic about this because of his age and health and situation, and he's got skin in the game, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. He's over-optimistic on the timeline because he wants it to happen before he checks out.
Right. But if it did, and it was more or less executed the way that he envisions, which, I mean, if we're talking crazy, it does make sense. Like, if we make a few crazy leaps of faith, it does make sense. Then you got to imagine it's connected to the cloud. You got to imagine it's going to have software updates. You got to imagine it's going to have security holes. You got to imagine.
Probably going to have ads.
Oh.
Ad supported.
Oh.
It's like the Kindle, where you can get the ad supported Kindle and you can get the full Kindle.
It's like subscribing to your lifespan. Like, you want to keep living? Keep paying.
It's like mortality as a service.
Oh, exactly. Or immortality as a service.
Immortality as a service. Yeah.
Don't
put your microtransactions.
Don't miss that payment. Do you want? And you could imagine, like, you know, extra $5 for improved eyesight, extra $5 for enhanced olfactory sensitivity.
Hey, I'd pay $5 for the eyesight.
Every month, though, it adds up. It adds up for over 700 years.
Yeah, that's true.
And then, of course, what if they're capable of creating superhuman abilities like, I don't know if that would be, I suppose it would be possible. I suppose the nanobots could assemble like a graphene molecules or something into like an almost exoskeleton type of thing. Like
I just started to say like your Wolverine skeleton.
Right. Oh man. Well,
yeah. Welcome to the new format.
The new format. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's fun. So here's the thing. So decide for yourself, dear listener. I'll link to the video, and it's a really good sort of most recent version of Kurzweil's talk, which is super persuasive. I mean, he's crazy. I think he's either a genius or he's crazy. He's one or the other. He's not normal. And he's been right about a lot of things, and his delivery alone, his deadpan delivery is hilarious. So it's a good video. It's a pretty up to, it's relatively new. And the Q&A at the end is wild when he talks about the bridges from the current situation, the bridges from the current situation to immortality for the human race, or the end of death by natural causes anyway. So you can check it out for yourself. Let us know what you think. But maybe we should wrap it up there.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, if I could remember the end of the show, we'd be hitting it out of the park.
Yeah.
That's it for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for Terrifying Robot Dog. Bye.